The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower. I have three guests today: Larry Allen of Allen Federal, Lisa Paife of Lofeld Consulting, and Nick Wakeman, editor-in-chief of Washington Technology. Welcome, all of you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Mark, great.
Nick, tell people who you are, what WashTech does. I guess all my listeners should know. They damn well
I hope they do. We are a business website. We cover government contractors, so hopefully we give you information that helps you do your job better and have success in the market. So we follow the trends, the contract awards, M&A.
And you've got brilliant columnists. So.
Yes, and we have brilliant columnists, definitely. Like Lisa Paife. Oh, and that guy named Mark Amtower.
Oh, yeah, him too. Yeah, and I've told several of my best friends that they should write for you. Lisa, tell people what you do at Lofeld, please.
Okay, I'm vice president at Lofeld Consulting, so I help our clients with capture and proposal strategies and management. Also do a lot of training in proposal management, proposal reviews. And I'm also president of the Association of Proposal Management Professionals National Capital Area Chapter, APMP-NCA. We're the largest chapter in the U.S., so I represent more than 1,300 members.
Cool. And you are a yoga teacher.
And I'm also a yoga teacher. Keeps my calm.
Yes, it does. I don't have any of that. What? I'll ask you afterwards. Okay. Larry.
Well, I do a mean downward dog, but that's probably about the extent of my yoga. Allen Federal, Mark, works with government contractors on a variety of issues, all designed to help their government business, whether it's intelligence gathering, relationship development, or compliance. We're here to help and keep you out of the ditch.
Without mentioning the client name, Larry and I were both going in to meet with a particular company, and we both knew it because I had recommended Larry to them. And we were like back to back one morning, and I said, don't do it that way, because you're just going to hear deeper in detail from Larry what I'm going to tell you, to begin with. So just bring us in at the same time. So
that's right. And that worked out real well for both of us.
It did. Neither of us got the gig. So we're going to be talking today about what's coming down the pike for the contracting community because of the recent election results. And there's a lot of hand-wringing and stuff. We're not going to get into the hand-wringing side of things, but let's start with this idea. Mr. Trump has policies that he has, priorities that he has enumerated throughout the campaign. His appointees will be implementing policies around these priorities. And from there, the programs will be impacted. And amongst these are defense, cyber, healthcare, et cetera. So we can kind of lump that into our IT modernization, which is a major issue moving forward. So, Nick, start us off here. I'll throw you into the fire first.
What would you like to know? I mean, there's all kinds of places we can start.
Well, pick one. Let's start with cyber.
Okay, cyber. Obviously it's going to be a priority. I think we'll see, more spending there. But I think we were going to see more spending there no matter who got elected. So I'm not sure that that'll be a big change, a big disruption. There's so many things that happen that kind of trickle down. I think you'll see, he talks about a hiring freeze. So that's going to be more opportunities for contractors. Public-private partnerships, whether it's in infrastructure or whatever, again, I think you're going to see more work going to contractors. They want, more, commercial technology instead of, home built. So again, I think that's going to change how contractors do business instead of developing themselves, more partnerships with, you know, emerging tech companies. That's sort of my first take on that.
Lisa.
Yeah, I think the current administration's proposed $3.1 billion IT modernization fund, the House passed the Modernizing Government Technology Act. It's now in the Senate. I think that will go forward. So that is something that the Obama administration proposed that I think will go forward under the new administration, enabling agencies to deal with the fact that 90% of their budgets can be spent on legacy IT rather than moving forward with improvements in cyber, improvements in infrastructure, all of which are in keeping with Trump's agenda of, you know, our better dominance in the cyber arena and improving America's infrastructure. So I see that going forward. That's probably positive for IT contractors.
Well, certainly, Mark, I'm not going to rain on the parade. I think there are going to be some opportunities. We talked about some in defense. The day after the election, defense stocks went up a lot, which is an indication that the market believes anyway that the next 4 years could be a bellwether for companies in that environment. Looking also at the recent past, defense spending has gone down as our overseas operations have been reduced. So now I think we're going to be working on infrastructure, not to say that that's going to give us carte blanche to project ourselves around the world, but I think some retrenchment is needed to bring systems up to speed. One of the things that Nick mentioned was cyber, and he's absolutely right, but inside cyber, I see an increased emphasis, and it's not new with the incoming administration, but I do think it will be newly emphasized, and that is secure supply chain. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that when we're getting an IT solution, particularly one in the cyber world, that all the people that we're getting it from are paying attention to where they in turn are getting their parts and components from. We already have things on the books like the Trade Agreements Act and technology export restrictions. I think we're going to see some more things along the lines of what a secure supply chain needs to look like if you're going to do business, particularly with the Department of Defense or Department of Homeland Security.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Related to that is Internet of Things, because that will probably be a related initiative where we have to strengthen our cybersecurity related to Internet of Things, which is could be anything from the power grid to buildings, et cetera.
Yeah, it'll be. I agree about the supply chain issue. It'll be interesting though how they implement that with their sort of Trump's priority of stripping away regulations. Mm-hmm. So how do you, you know, because you're going to have to make companies certify more that they're in compliance, and here's, you know, they need to collect data to show that. So you could argue, well, you're putting more requirements on us.
Well, to that, you know, when Joanne was formatting Soup 5, supply chain was huge ground level there.
It is, Mark. So Joanne Witek over at Soup, which is a major IT IDIQ contract, has secure supply language in it now. So too does Department of Defense rules and regulations, and they've been enhanced. So there wasn't just one iteration. There were at least two iterations of DOD rules in this one area. Right now, though, I still think that the word has not gotten out to the great majority of contractors, particularly commercial IT companies, that this is an area that they truly need to pay attention to. And I think that word is now going to get out. And my hope is that people will pay attention. But my suspicion is that we're going to have somebody somewhere who doesn't pay attention selling items in to the government that maybe they haven't checked, and they'll become the poster child for what not to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, we always have that. I want to touch on, we'll just go into it now, the hiring freeze thing. This is, you know, I think there's a maybe an overreaction here. This happens with every new president, and it's not odd. I've been in business through 9 presidential election cycles. This is my 6th president. It happens every time.
It does. We do have at least a temporary hiring freeze. I think that every administration wants to, first of all, have an opportunity to get their own people in, and this administration has already started that effort in terms of vetting, at this point, senior-level people, but also taking a look at lower-level appointees. They also want to have the opportunity to see what it is that exists on the ground in different agencies. You know, I would be surprised if the briefing books that each cabinet-level agency put together have been read yet. This is another example of, you know, why you would want to have a hiring freeze so you have some idea. The question I think we have here is, will the hiring freeze this time around be any different in terms of duration and perhaps reach than its immediate predecessors? And there's some reason to believe that it will. One of the things we've gotten away from over the last 8 years is this whole concept of government doing things that compete with the private sector and government geek speak, it's A76 issues. And I suspect we're going to have an A76 resurgence and reexamination. Why? We have one every time we get a Republican president. A76 is one of their bread and butter issues. So I think that while to a certain extent a freeze is business as usual, there is some reason to watch this area and see if there might be something additional in terms of opportunities for contractors providing services to do more on a longer-term basis with this incoming group.
So Larry, it sounds like I'm going to have to figure out how to put inherently governmental in a headline again.
That's right.
Yes,
right.
Definitely. And I think this is, once again, going to be an opportunity for those contractors that have the right vehicles, because agencies that are in a bind, you know, they might have sustainment programs and systems that they're working on that can't stop, yet there's a hiring freeze and maybe there's some attrition, they're going to need to reach out to contractors that have vehicles that make it easy for them to procure the bodies to do the jobs.
I want to pick up on those right vehicles after the break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We shall return after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with Larry Allen, Allen Federal, allenfederal.com, Lisa Paife of Lohfeld Consulting, lohfeldconsulting.com, and Nick Wakeman, washingtontechnology.com. Again, thank you all for being here. Lisa, you said something that always piques my interest. Companies with the right vehicles, the right contracts.
Yeah, I
think which are going to be the right contracts?
I think a lot of agencies are going to have to quickly reach out to their favorite contractors to fill ongoing positions related to sustaining IT systems, sustaining programs. So certainly vehicles like GSA Alliant, OASIS would be a big one because that covers a full range of professional services. Any of the defense IDIQs, because I'm sure defense contractors will be much in demand as we work through the transition time. So all of those will be a big deal. Trump did call for modernization of the VA by expanding investments in state-of-the-art technology. So I think, you know, for example, the VA is in the process of issuing a big RFP for their healthcare network. So that could certainly be still going forward gangbusters, and that would require a lot of contractor support.
And VA has a T4.
The T4 contract, yeah. T4,
that's a lot of... A lot of business flows through that. So if you're
that's
on that
true.
Vehicle,
that's true.
You're really well positioned for VA.
I like the opportunity of doing business at the VA for a couple of reasons. One, they currently have appropriated dollars, which not every agency has. That's a big benefit. Two, it tends to be a fairly bipartisan issue in Congress. But the downside, or not necessarily a downside, but the cautionary note I always tell my clients, Mark, is look, it's the VA. It's a high visibility agency that has some organizational and operational challenges currently. And anytime you get involved in a high visibility project with an agency with lots of constituencies and lots of congressional oversight, you want to be at least a little bit careful, because the chances of it not being business as usual are pretty good. And what I mean by that is you want to make sure you've got the business part of it down, but you also understand the political climate in which you're doing work at the VA.
Yeah. And it doesn't, I can't remember all of them, but VA CIO is Senate confirmed, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's another.
It's going to be a biggie. I mean, there's only 10 CIOs that are appointees. VA is definitely one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even with a Republican Senate, I mean, that's still a process that people have to go through. So it'll be a while before we have somebody in that position.
You're not going to get somebody from the Arabian Horse League running it. don't understand that joke, you haven't been in this game long enough.
We certainly, you know, can't ignore health care reform. That's going to have immediate impacts because that was one of the primary agendas of the Trump campaign was dismantling some or all of Obamacare. Well, what's going to happen there? That's going to have immediate impacts on all of the many IT systems related to healthcare.gov, whether you're talking about military health systems, IRS, HHS. So that's going to result in a lot more IT contracts to dismantle what they've been working on for years and years to implement.
It'll probably be more of a remantle.
I heard something very interesting recently about how they're going to do one way they may do that. They'll repeal it, but then set a deadline for replacing it. So they won't cancel it right away. Mm-hmm. They'll have 2 years where it'll keep going the way it is till they figure out what they want to do next.
It'll be 5 years.
Yeah. It'll be five. Yeah, that's what that was. This commentator also was saying.
Yeah.
So then you're going to have a deadline. You're going to run out of time. You'll just extend it again.
Mm-hmm. And that way, if the president's not here, then it's no longer his fault.
Right.
Plan ahead. There's so much going on here. Let's talk about the speed of the appointments. Even with Republican-controlled House and Senate, the approval process is never slow. There's a lot of hubbub in the media right now. He's going slow. No, he's not going slow. Nobody moves fast here. You know, Mr. Obama didn't make his first appointments or announcements for appointments until early December. So it was 3 to 4 weeks after his election. But what are your bellwether appointments, Larry? What's going to be the,
Well, certainly the appointments that impact government contractors the most, Mark, are going to be some like the 10 appointed CIOs. They're going to be looking at the head of the General Services Administration, the head of the Small Business Administration, even some key positions inside the Office of Management and Budget. Those are the ones that set the policies, and not everybody pays attention to policy, but you should, because that can change your market.
Oh, IRA and OFPP.
That's right. They can do things to you. They can do things for you. Usually it's the latter if you're not paying attention. So you want to make sure that you're keeping an eye on some of these appointees in terms of when we're going to see these. Look, none of the people in this echelon of appointees are going to be among the first to be approved. And everyone has to go through a vetting process. And the vetting process takes time and paperwork. And everybody wants to make sure that, you are who you say you are and that there are minimal amount of skeletons. Hopefully we're smart enough and mature enough now to know that anybody in government service probably shouldn't or isn't going to be skeleton free. It's a question of how large and what type. You want to be looking, I think, first for some of these CIO appointments. I think you're going to look at the SBA administrator as one of the first ones in this this iteration of appointees. Further down the line will be the Office of Federal Procurement Policy Administrator. It may be late spring, early summer before we see that. In terms of GSA, I think we'll probably go at least half of the summer before we will probably have a nominee, but we won't have anybody officially in until the summer at the General Services Administration, because these are the types of things that take a while. And you also have administrations that handle appointees differently. The original GSA administrator for the Obama administration was kept in acting status purposely by the administration for a while because that's the way they wanted it. So that wasn't a case of the Senate dragging its feet. So we could have that too. But these are things we're not going to know until the middle of the spring at the earliest when we start getting some names, and we'll be well into the summer before we have people actually in position.
Now, let me ask you a question. How does that – I just thought of this listening to you talk. So let's say the GSA administrator is acting or vacant. How does that affect things like the EIS contract that's supposed to be awarded in spring, early summer?
That big EIS 2020 telecommunications contract, it won't. I mean, Mary Davey, who's the assistant commissioner for what is now called the integrated technology category, is still there, and she's going to be shepherding that through. I don't think that having an administrator will matter significantly for that. I think the biggest place that you see the absence of an administrator affecting GSA is in the public building service side, because that portfolio is very much larger. And it also is one that tends to have a higher degree of political visibility.
Yeah.
They also just gave a 50-year lease to somebody.
That's right. We could do a whole show on that.
Right.
Lucy, you have a thought on this?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention impacts on category management. That's been, you know, in the news for us procurement nerds for a while now. And it's something that the current administration has tried to institutionalize. Certainly GSA has been reorganized to focus on category management initiatives, and OMB issued a circular to give more direction on using best-in-class vehicles. Larry and I were talking about this before the show started. It'll be interesting to see what happens, whether there'll be continued attempts to enforce category management or it'll just kind of fall by the wayside.
Well, we can hope. Did I say that out loud?
No, well, I think that you're going to have two paths forward on category management, Mark. I think, for one thing, as a government-wide enterprise, we've seen the high watermark for category management. We're going to have different people with different priorities coming in to the Office of Management and Budget. Mm-hmm. They're going to want to look at things their own way. Category management might not officially be killed off, but it's certainly going to be bumped down a few pegs on the priority list with the attendant amount of staffing attention paid to it. On the other hand, GSA has already reorganized the Federal Acquisition Service around category management lines. So at least as far as that agency is concerned, they are making a decision to be a category management-focused agency. I think the real question there, and I don't know the answer, is that going to end up being the best way to serve their customers? They certainly seem to think so at GSA. I don't have any reason to doubt them, but only time is going to tell us whether or not the category management construct is something that will enable customers to find GSA solutions more easily.
I don't doubt their sincerity and their belief in this. I doubt their conclusion. I don't agree with category management outside of, you know, lower end products.
Well, certainly that's, you know, one of the things, and we'd been talking about this again, as Lisa mentioned beforehand, you know, category management is on a government wide basis is predicated on best in class across government. If you have most of rest of government now effectively opting out, what does that mean for GSA? Best in GSA class? And are they going to start restricting their offerings unilaterally, which has the potential to reduce their position in the federal marketplace, something which GSA relies upon to keep itself going?
Yeah. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We shall return right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with Nick Wakeman, Wash Tech, Lisa Paife, Lofeld Consulting, and Larry Allen of Allen Federal. And the next topic of discussion is An interesting experiment gone awry, 18F. They, you know, run by outsiders who operated not just outside the box, but maybe outside the universe. Larry, start.
Mark, GSA's 18F organization, as you indicated, was something that has been intended to be innovative and being government, working with government to solve complicated IT projects. And certainly that's exactly what 18F has done since its origination, working with agencies to try to overcome difficult technology-based questions, using people, as you point out, who are largely outside the standard GS federal personnel classification system. The other thing, however, that 18F has done is lose money.
Yes.
We saw just a couple of months ago the General Government Accountability Office come out saying that 18F is never close to operated at an even basis, that they've overestimated their income projections routinely, underestimated their expenses routinely.
Expanded their staff enormously.
Right. They hired people hand over fist to do things. So I think the question now is, will 18F survive the transition to a new administration? And I'm going to take an early vote and say no.
Yeah, I have to agree.
I agree on that one as well, because the administration coming in is not going to be in favor of using Silicon Valley type IT innovation strategies. They'll be more along the lines of traditional using IT to cut costs in government and cut positions in government. So I don't see them continuing with 18F, and I don't see Department of Defense's efforts to experiment with things like the Defense Digital Service Team using Silicon Valley type entrepreneurs and innovators going forward either. I think that's a thing of the past as well.
Yeah, I think what killed 18F, you know, when you look at the GAO report, and what more than half the time they were not working on billable projects.
Right.
I mean, that's just...
just common sense.
Yeah, common sense.
Yeah.
I mean, of course you have to market yourself, but you were getting enough from people like me and others, you were getting enough free publicity. You didn't need to do as much marketing, I think. And they should have been focused on getting work, work done.
You know, the events where I saw 18F personnel speak about issues, I got less information than I normally do when I hear, you know, agency officials talk about anything. And that's hard to do.
I mean, I think they did, when they did work, I think they did good work. But the question always was, you know, you do a little pilot, does it have any legs? Who's going to pick it up? Who's going to take it from there? Because they never wanted to do, you know, the large, long-term work. So,
I don't think that, I don't know that we ever saw long-term work there. Similarly, coming in with this administration, we're going to have a renewed emphasis on operations the government does that compete with the private sector. In federal geek speak parlance, that's A76, the OMB circular that talks about government competing with the private sector in certain areas that are not inherently governmental functions. Traditional bread and butter issue for a Republican administration, Mark, I think. That's another reason why we can say 18F might go away, because at its core, that's what it does. It competes with the private sector, competes with government contractors. Just from an A76 perspective, you'd have to say that its days could be numbered.
And related to IT innovation is the use of the H-1B visa program by a lot of contractors to reach out to high-tech experts from other countries, and Silicon Valley did the same thing. Trump wants to do away with that program. So that could have immediate impacts on IT hires.
Will it have an impact? Let me ask this a different way. If he brings in somebody as the federal CIO who's been here before, who's advising him on these things, can his opinion change?
It's possible that his opinion could change in a limited way, but he'd have to go a long way from the policy pronouncements he made on the campaign trail to a government operations decision. I think right now, what might happen in that front is purely speculative, and there'd have to be a pretty strong case made to why they would vary from what they had said that got them in the White House to begin with.
Right, because they said that we shouldn't be using this program. Instead, we should be focusing on employing Americans. So if they continue to use this program, that would be pretty much a slap in the face to their supporters who were pushing for more training and employment for unemployed American workers.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think there's some, I think he'll figure out wiggle room, because I think the reality is in the short term, you're not going to be able to fill those jobs. And so I think he's going to be, you know, whether it's, you know, his tech advisors will be saying, hey, this is the reality. We need to be able to hire X amount of whether it's H-1B, which I'm not a big fan of H-1B because I feel it's unfair to the worker. They get kind of, you know, owned, so to speak, by one particular employer. They have no mobility, and it's not really a path towards citizenship, but that's just my personal opinion.
Well,
but
kind of is what it is, but I think, you know, one way or another, we're going to need some version of
right,
it.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested to see what happens with SBA and who leads that, because I think that could be one area that continues the emphasis on small business from the Obama administration. I think that will probably continue under the Trump administration to a certain degree.
Well, explain that, because I haven't seen a lot of teeth in anything SBA's done ever.
Well, not teeth, but you have to say, I mean, there has been more dollars have been going to small businesses, whether it's veteran-owned, mm-hmm. whether it's women-owned. You have all those category agencies have been hitting their goals. And I think you'll see that continue, because I don't think, you know, all of a sudden you see small businesses fading. You know, he's opening himself up to criticism that, oh, you're just going with big corporate America. So,
do you think he'll focus on any relief for the mid-tiers who are always advocating for raising size standards, or you think that will be very low priority?
I think he might talk about that, but I think that's just such a hard problem to solve that
I don't think it's on his radar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Larry?
It's not on his radar, and medium-tier business issues are, you know, they're amorphous. Anything that's amorphous is tough to develop a policy right. on, and it touches so many things potentially, not even just government procurement, but things like international trade deals that we have that are based on size standard calculations. If we increase ours, they're already large because we're a bigger country. Than most of the people we trade with, what type of disruption would that bring there? I don't know. Maybe this president might like a little disruption in international trade, but I doubt this would be the place that would manifest itself.
Yeah. On the SBA front, I'm still shocked when I look at all of the regulations around each of the set-aside categories, how much paperwork goes in to maintaining or earning a status, and how many companies drop out of the process as a result. And on top of that, you have these scam firms out there saying, well, we'll register you in SAM and help you with your 8A or your hub zone, or we'll prove your, you know, whatever, you know, we'll take you to whatever those websites are that'll trace your ancestry, and you have 1/9,000th of this and you qualify.
Although, speaking of hub zone, that could be an area where the next administration could focus, since they are trying to reach out and help the poor performing, economically disadvantaged sectors of our nation. So that could be a focus.
Yeah. As long as they enforce the hub zone regulations, I'd be all for that. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, I see violations of virtually every category. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I hold against SBA. They aren't monitoring this. And, you know, I go back to the 80s where, you know, I know that a Filipino maid was the basis for an 8A company.
I don't think you'll see that part of it get better. I don't think that's going to change, because I don't think there'll be more enforcement. If anything, it might go back to more self-certification instead of all that verification and compliance.
It's an interesting point. I was at an event earlier this week where we had a number of agency inspectors general speak, and the whole role of the SBA in this enforcement arena that you were just speaking to, Mark, came up. And it's very clear that at least a couple of the IG representatives from different agencies believe that it's their job to do that. And one
the
of the
IGs
reasons,
or SBAs?
The IG. Okay. But one of the reasons they believe that is because they know they're not going to get traction from SBA in this area. So by default, it's something that DOD is looking at, to a certain extent GSA is looking at, and even the State Department. Those all three of those inspectors general organizations are looking at socioeconomic size standards, at least as they pertain to companies doing business at their agency. So it's kind of, on the one hand, it's good that there's oversight, but it's remarkable that the agency that's supposed to be doing this government-wide is kind of absent on watch.
Okay. We're going to take a break, our last break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with Nick, Lisa, and Larry right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here today with Nick Wakeman, Washington Technology, Lisa Pafe, Lofeld Consulting, and Larry Allen of Allen Federal. The elephant in the room is the immigration reform and all of the issues around it. And Lisa, start us off here.
Right. As we know, immigration reform was a cornerstone of the incoming administration's platform. I think we will see huge impacts for contractors that deal with Department of Homeland Security, specifically Customs and Border Protection. If you're in the business of biometrics, anything related to securing our borders, anything related to trickle-down effects on federal prisons. All of the contractors dealing with those types of programs, products, and services are probably going to see additional opportunities.
Yeah, I think that we'll definitely see more contracting there. But you know, one thing that surprised me with all the talk of building the wall is no one's looked back just 10 years, not even that far, with the fiasco that the Secure Border Initiative was, SBINet. That was going to be that virtual wall.
Right.
And because physically you can't build a wall across the whole border.
It could be a fence.
Or a fence. But no one's looked back and said, well, you know, we spent billions on this and we have nothing to show for it.
Couldn't we just go to certain parts of the Middle East and dig up mines and make a minefield?
I think it just like any other public policy issue, there could be an opportunity there for government contractors. One of my favorite defaults, Mark, is if you're trying to figure out what's hot in government contracting, just look at the headlines, the major national papers. Those will tell you. And then if you translate those issues to the agencies responsible for them, then you've got a rough idea of where the money's going to go and where the opportunities lie, which is always a good thing. The caveat, though, again, is that if those issues have already made the headlines in the Washington Post and you're going to do a bit of work on them, make sure you don't end up in the headlines of the Post for the wrong reasons.
You don't want to end up in a Bob O'Hara article?
No.
I need some final thoughts here on what contractors need to be thinking about, where you think the opportunities might lie, and anything else you really think you need to know to, or they need, the contractors need to know to move forward with eyes open. So, Nick, start us off.
Well, I think the best thing is to, you should be in there if you're not already, talking to your customers, figuring out which are your highest risk programs, because those are all going to be assessed. How can you support them? Who your champions are there? How you can support that person, you know, going forward, and also be patient, because I think we're not going to see huge change for a while.
Yeah, I agree with Nick. The change is going to take time to implement. But at the same time, very important to get in there and reassure your customers who, my husband works for the federal government, so I can certainly tell you that a lot of directors of federal offices are a little bit nervous, uncertain what's coming up. Get in there, talk to them, talk about the kind of vehicles you have and support you can offer immediately if they need it with experienced, trained personnel, products, services, et cetera.
First thing we need to keep in mind, Mark, is that we are, for the most part, operating a federal government on a continuing resolution. Most of the federal government runs out of money December 9th with the aforementioned exclusions of the VA, Congress itself, and military construction. So there's not going to be a lot of new stuff that pops because that can't under a CR. We're talking also right now about the possibility of having a continuing resolution in March, mm-hmm. which would effectively mean that we won't have an FY17. We'll have a federal 6-month 17, which could make for a busy spring and summer. So to the extent that my fellow panelists have said, patience, I want to add my voice to that. But just because things need to have patience doesn't mean there's nothing going on. There's going to continue to be work that goes on in critical areas that are not partisan in nature. Cyber is certainly going to be one of the main ones in that. Infrastructure improvement is going to be a considerable one that goes on. And then I think there's every reason as a government contractor looking forward when we do get appropriations, when we do start getting into FY18, to see a different type of government market than the one we've seen over the last few years, potentially one with a few more dollars in it, particularly in defense spending, and ones that will have funding to match what our new priorities are going to be with this administration that, again, will be different from previous priorities. So if you can hold tight now, do the legwork that has already been discussed here, then you're going to be positioned well to really take advantage of what I think will be a renaissance in our business.
Okay. Well, you said something that triggered something that I discussed at the MX Federal or Government IT Sales Summit the other day. And that is, you know, I predicted that Mr. Trump would not want a budget passed for this year. Okay. Then when I got home after that event, I saw that that was probably actually the case. So if that is indeed a fact, are we looking at an extraordinary end of FY because we still have this spend, and should contractors be queuing up that business now?
Boy, I would think so, Mark. Mm-hmm. I think Absolutely. We're going to have, you know, if you look at the federal fiscal year as the mile run, you know, we have 4 minutes to run a mile. Well, some of us do, maybe a little bit longer for me, but we're going to have
I take 20 minutes to walk.
We're going to have an 800 meters this year, half the yes. size. Mm-hmm. So people need to be prepared, and they need to be prepared to move twice as fast as they would in an ordinary year.
So Lisa, this is right up your alley, procurement lady.
Yeah.
Procurement nerd.
Procurement nerd, yeah. I agree 100%. We always see that fourth quarter, you know, the giant spike in sales. And so I think once we do finally get a budget reflecting new priorities, it's going to turn out to be a busy end of the fiscal year.
Yeah, and I think we'll see from some people I've talked to, they traditionally see, you know, November, December after an election, really, really busy, and then January drops out, mm-hmm. is dead. So I think we'll see that, and then I think it'll start to pick up again.
Do you think we're going to have a budget?
No. Yeah. I mean, I think we'll have, there might be some pockets, but I think you're right, your prediction of a CR for the whole year.
Mm-hmm. Lisa?
Yeah, I would agree. I don't see any reason for them to do anything but the CR because they're still working on so many different things, so many balls in the air. So it just makes sense.
And Mr. Hill graduate, albeit a while back.
Let me say, I hope not, because I think that having a full year CR is more expensive and disastrous in terms of good government operation. But I'm inclined to believe that there's a better than 50-50 chance we will have a full year CR that we'll all just have to make the best of.
Again, thank you all very much. Larry Allen, allenfederal.com. Lisa Paife, lowfeldconsulting.com. Nick Wakeman, washingtontechnology.com. This is not my day job. I advise companies on all aspects of marketing to the government. In this coming year, you cannot tell the players without a scorecard. The best scorecard that you can have in your pocket right now is LinkedIn. This will be tracking all of the appointments. There's 1.6 million feds on LinkedIn. About a quarter of a million of those are IT-titled people. So if you want to track the migration of people in or out of government, LinkedIn is the way to go, and I can show you how to navigate it. Drop me a line, markamtower@gmail.com, and thank you very much for listening to Amtower Off Center.
You've been listening to Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.